India has been looking to become the world's manufacturing hub for at least a decade. Despite being the fastest growing economy with all previous governments, India was not able to attract investments in manufacturing due to ineffective policies and approach. However, India has the physical and digital infrastructure to make realistic bid to be an important player in global supply chains with production-linked incentive schemes as the platform to plug into global manufacturing. To discuss this in detail, we have a panel of esteemed experts with us. Mr. Hiran Ved, Whole-time Director, Chief Executive Officer, and Chief Executive Officer. He holds around 2 decades of experience in this field. Mr. Ramdeo Agarwal, Chairman of Motilal Oswal Financial Services Limited. Mr. Jitin Doshi, Co-founder and CIO of Enam Asset Management Company Limited. He also holds 2 decades of experience. And as well, and then we have Mr. Vikas Agarwal, CEO and AIF at PMS Experts India. Now I'll be handing over the mic to Mr. Vikas Agarwal, who will be moderating the session. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Pragya. While the other panelists they are joining in, I'll just take a minute quickly to give you some background about this. So basically, we thought we'll reach out to the most respected panelists, Mr. Hiran Ved, Mr. Ramdeo Agarwal, Mr. Jitin Doshi. They've been investing in equity markets for over 2.5 decades, you know, in fact, more than that. Mr. Ramdeo Agarwal has started investing since 1986, so more than, you know, good 35, 40 years, and I've learned a lot personally from Mr. Ramdeo Agarwal. So while they are just joining in, we'll talk about the topic first. So basically, the topic is that, well, everybody talked about, you know, India to become third largest economy. We see Germany and Japan, they are degrowing, whereas India is growing. It's like the two trains coming on the opposite side, crossing each other. Obviously, they tend to move faster. And so not that we are doing good, but there are other economies which are not able to do well. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise for us. And that's the reason we are moving towards that. So we'll not take the complete 100% credit for that. But yes, India as an economy is doing very well. But on the other hand, you see manufacturing is one aspect, you know, which is very, very important. So if you look at the GDP component, so, you know, a lot of thing comes from manufacturing. And we saw manufacturing evolving very well during 60s, 70s, 80s time. And post 2000, we saw some amount of, you know, degrowth. So today we'll read their mind, understand more how it is shaping up, what it requires India to be in terms of manufacturing so that we can become $5 trillion economies, you know, 5 years down the line. So we'll wait for them to join in and then start again. So let's hold for a minute or two. In the meantime, yes. Can you AV, our AV, the one that we are running in, maybe with the music, yeah.
Just
wait for a second, Pratya. 1 second.
So I'll be introducing everyone again, just so that you know we are all on the right page. Just give me a moment.
Yeah, Pragya, you can start, and the other panelists, they're just joining in.
Okay. So once again, now that we have, as we all are aware, that we were discussing about shifting trends and emerging mindsets, and now that we have a deeper understanding upon that topic, we'll now be taking up a very informative topic as well. That is, can India be a manufacturing hub, or is it just a pipe dream? So India has been looking to become the world's manufacturing hub for at least a decade. And despite the fastest growing economy with all previous governments, India was not able to attract investments in manufacturing due to ineffective policies and approaches. However, India has had the physical and the digital infrastructure to make a realistic bid to be an important player in the global supply chains with production-linked incentive schemes as the platform to plug into global manufacturing. So to discuss this in detail, we have a panel of esteemed experts with us. Mr. Hiran Ved, full-time director, chief executive officer, chief investment officer at Alchemy Capital Management. Mr. Ramdeo Agarwal, chairman of Motilal Oswal Financial Service Limited. Mr. Jitin Doshi, co-founder and chief investment officer of Enam Asset Management Company Private Limited. And I would also like to point out that all, as well as Mr. Vikas Agarwal, he is the CEO of AIF and PMS Experts India. And I would also like to point out that Mr. Hiran Ved, Ramdeo Agarwal sir, and Jitin Doshi sir all have almost about 20 years plus experience in this industry. And now I'll be handing over the mic to Mr. Vikas Agarwal, who will be moderating this session. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Pragya. Hello, Ramdev ji. Namaste. Hello, Hiren ji and Jiten ji. Can you hear me?
यस
ओके रामदेव जी, मुझे मेरी आवाज आ रही है आपको?
एकदम क्लियर
ओके ग्रेट ग्रेट.
मेरी आवाज सुनाई
यस
दे रही
यस सर. हिरेन सर, कैन यू स्पीक अ बिट एनीथिंग?
या कैन यू हियर मी?
या आई कैन हियर यू. जितेन जी?
परफेक्ट.
या कैन यू हियर मी?
या वेरी मच वेरी मच. सो
थैंक यू.
थैंक यू सो मच. आपने अपना कीमती समय निकाला एंड यू नो यू अग्रीड टू स्पीक टू ऑल आर इन्वेस्टर्स. आई रिमेम्बर अभी जस्ट नाउ प्रज्ञा वॉज मेंशनिंग कि सबका 20 साल का एक्सपीरियंस है. मैंने कहा 20 साल नहीं, जब मैं पैदा नहीं हुआ था. सो तब से रामदेव जी हैज बीन इन्वेस्टिंग इन इक्विटी मार्केट. सो रामदेव जी, आई थिंक आई रिमेम्बर आई हैड अ चांस टू वर्क विथ हिम. ही स्टार्टेड इन्वेस्टिंग फ्रॉम 1981 टाइम्स एंड 1986 ही फाउंडेड दिस कंपनी मोतीलाल ओसवाल. सो दिस इज द मोस्ट रेस्पेक्टेड पैनल दैट आई एम गोइंग टू स्पीक एंड रीड देयर माइंड. सो थैंक यू सो मच वंस अगेन फॉर ज्वाइनिंग इन. थैंक यू जितेन जी, थैंक यू हिरेन जी फॉर टेकिंग द टाइम आउट फ्रॉम योर बिजी शेड्यूल एंड अग्रीड टू स्पीक टू ऑल आर इन्वेस्टर्स. आई ऑल्सो टेक दिस अपॉर्चुनिटी टू थैंक प्लेटफॉर्म यू नो मीडिया पार्टनर ईटी मार्केट्स. विदाउट देयर सपोर्ट वी वुड हैव नॉट रीच्ड आउट टू सो मेनी पीपल. सो देर आर 2,600 पीपल हु आर वॉचिंग अस नाउ ऑनलाइन एंड ईगर एंड कीन टू हेयर योर थॉट्स ऑन द सब्जेक्ट. तो आज का जो सब्जेक्ट लिया है हम लोगों ने, बेसिकली वी चोजन दिस टॉपिक एज लाइक मैन्युफैक्चरिंग. हाउ कैन इंडिया बी एवर मैन्युफैक्चरिंग हब? देयर वाज अ टाइम पोस्ट इंडिपेंडेंस वी सॉ मैन्युफैक्चरिंग यूज्ड टू कंट्रीब्यूट द मैक्सिमम टू आवर जीडीपी एंड देन वी सॉ दैट सर्विस इंडस्ट्री पिक्ड अप, द अदर कंपोनेंट एग्रीकल्चर पिक्ड अप. सो द फर्स्ट थिंग इज वी वांट टू टॉक अबाउट द इंपॉर्टेंस ऑफ मैन्युफैक्चरिंग. आई वांट टू स्टार्ट द कन्वर्सेशन. सो वन ऑफ यू माइट हैव टू close the Google link that you've opened up while entering this room. You can turn it off and you can come out of it. You can cross the same. So फिर आपको disturbance नहीं आएगा sir. So my first question to Jitenji, I want to start with you first, that what is the importance of manufacturing in India? Like when you look at the GDP component, what is the current ratio, what it used to be when you began your career, and how it is going to be going ahead?
Sure. Thank you so much, Vikas ji, and a very good evening to all our audience and my fellow panelists. I think one can never underscore the importance of manufacturing in any economy. It's a very important component, as it not only means job creation, self-sufficiency, absorption of technology, but it also is basically nothing but making your country very proud of what sort of technology that you can innovate, because you require that to be constantly innovating in manufacturing. Over the last few years, I think we have heavily declined, and I think the presence of China in the global economy has actually been very important, and they've taken the center stage for all sorts of manufacturing. While it all started with, you know, probably low value added items, it's all gone to high tech now. So I think you cannot ignore the dominance and importance of manufacturing. Today, I see that, you know, manufacturing is very critical, and I think our government has realized that. And over the last couple of years, the government has actually created an environment where we see all the investments coming back into the country. So actually, our manufacturing revolution should have started many years ago. But unfortunately, between 2006 to 2012, a lot of capital went out externally, which should have been invested in India. And we saw a lot of entrepreneurs not having great confidence in what was happening in the country. And that's why you saw mega acquisitions happening outside instead of that manufacturing revolution happening in India. To my mind, I think government has created a very good level playing field now. It's a very conducive environment. If you see now also, there has been a huge turmoil globally, many disruptions, which has actually led to global investors looking at India. Well, if everything was okay, nobody would want to disrupt what was going on very well. But over the last few years, there was a godsend opportunity. People have relooked at what their manufacturing supply chain should look like. And that's, I think, a great opportunity that came in for India. So I think not only have we opened up our doors to foreign capital through PLI, we are also encouraging local manufacturing. And we see this today, which is at about 17-18% of our GDP, going up to 25% in the next maybe 7 or 8 years. But the important part, Vikas, is that when you look back, you know, we missed the revolution for low-cost manufacturing and low value add. But today, what is very important is we have leapfrogged many revolutions. And when you look at what the Tatas are trying to do, manufacturing of aircraft, manufacturing of mobile phones, we're trying to have our own semiconductor unit in India. I think we are, you know, we are now having arrived in the global scene, talking of really high value manufacturing, high tech manufacturing, which I think is going to create a lot of jobs. And not only that, bring a huge credibility about India's capability in the developed markets. So I think this is our time under the sun. Government has made a very conducive environment. Tax rates for the last 5 years are unchanged. We have given a right signal to entrepreneurs that if you come, commit capital, the government is welcoming that, embracing that with open arms. And we see that large multinational corporations have actually started, you know, having a great belief in where India is, where India's macroeconomic situation is. And that has led them to start looking at India. In fact, 5 years ago, no one was even prepared to look at India. So I think we have got now the right attention of all the big boys. We see that that investment will definitely come into India. It will take some time, but we are on the radar, both in terms of a outsourcing destination for whatever the requirements are globally, and also offering a very large domestic market opportunity now that India is the fifth largest economy in the world. Also, it's very difficult for any large corporation to actually avoid or ignore what India is doing. So I think in every manner, we are seeing very positive signs, and we believe that this ability for India to scale up, the time has come now. And we are very, very confident that over the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years, we'll become a very formidable force across at least a few industries where we are globally competitive. But surely, India is headed in a direction where manufacturing will, as a percentage of our GDP, will keep going up year after year. So I'm very, very confident that there was no conducive environment in the past, which has changed. Tax rates are favorable. Government is also very open about things. And I think people are looking at alternates, and we offer a dual opportunity, one of a very strong outsourcing possibility and a big, huge domestic market, which makes it very feasible for large multinationals to look at India. So I think it's a great opportunity for them.
All right, great. I think that clearly indicates that India is going in the right direction, as you rightly mentioned, and all things are going in our favor. I'll come to you, Jitinji. Before that, let me go to Ramdev Agarwal ji. Ramdev ji, today's topic is basically the golden decade for India. And we have said that India was the first golden egg, और उसके बाद में ब्रिटिश राज आया एंड लॉट ऑफ थिंग्स वेंट अवे एंड देन अगेन इंडिया स्टार्टेड बिकमिंग ट्रिलियन डॉलर इकोनॉमी. वी टुक 50 इयर्स 60 इयर्स टू बिकम 1 ट्रिलियन डॉलर इकोनॉमी इन 2007. उसके बाद में हम वहां से ऐड कर रहे हैं. सो मेरा क्वेश्चन आपसे ये है सर कि पहले के जीडीपी में इफ यू लुक एट लाइक द मैन्युफैक्चरिंग द कंपोनेंट कंट्रीब्यूशन टू जीडीपी ऑफ द मैन्युफैक्चरिंग वाज वेरी हाई. वो धीरे धीरे वो सर्विस में बढ़ता चला गया. डू यू सी इट इज बाउंसिंग बैक कमिंग बैक और हाउ इंडिया विल प्ले एन इम्पॉर्टेंट रोल इन द ग्लोबल सप्लाई चेन सिस्टम. व्हाट डू यू से?
Yeah, thank you, Vikas. I think, see, first thing is that government is determined to make it happen. And as you said, atmosphere is conducive. India has huge capability to make it happen. And more importantly, Babus are committed to making it happen. You know, so, yahan par bina sarkar ke kuch hota nahi, bahut badi cheez hai. Because, see, one of the things, I was talking to one very large conglomerate, manufacturing conglomerate. So I asked him, you have worked in Thailand, Indonesia, all over, and you have come here, you have seen the environment. What is really missing here? I mean, why manufacturing is not taking off? Like services, current year, services exports have grown at 30% current year. But manufacturing is struggling in the sense that maybe 5-6%, 7%. So why manufacturing is not exploding? So he said it's a mindset issue. So what is the mindset? See, you know, this the first sign of, if you see the biggest manufacturing exports started happening from Korea, Japan, all these countries. So they were very small markets. The domestic market was very small. So they always set up the capacities and businesses only for exports. Always they did it for exports. So there was a mindset that we will export and hence Everything, even government was aligned to making it happen for the exports. They will have the port, they will have the infrastructure, they will have the clearances, everything. Here, most of the Indian entrepreneurs and manufacturers, they have a huge domestic market. Till 91, everything was short supply. Next 20 years, at least we took care of the lot of domestic demand. So they never set it up as a only for export, dedicated export unit. They always looked at, okay, we will put up 80%, 90%, broadly we'll make it for India. And on top of it, surplus will offload in the global market. You look at our steel industry, we are very, very competitive. I mean, everybody does at the margin export to the world. Otherwise, nobody can match India in terms of steel competitiveness. We have the iron ore, we have the coal, we have the low cost labor, we have the technology. Everything is there. What is there not doing 100 million tons? I mean, you damn thing, you produce 100 million tons, it might sell for $5 plus or $5 minus. You will be able to do it. But we are not able to do it. Because the mindset is always to cater to the domestic market. Jitne bhi hai, JSW hai, Tata's hai, sab ke sab, they are all very successful. They know everything. What is there that JSW or TISCO cannot do? The issue is that their mindset is only incremental production will be exported. Now, when they are not able to, when there is not adequate demand in India, or when they see prices higher in the global market, then only they resort to exporting. So basically the mindset is not to build capacity for global requirement. Whereas in services like Infosys, TCS, they never looked at India. In fact, they are so, I would not say incompetent, but they don't have mindset to cater to India. The 95% of exports are all global. And you go to their office, you go to visit the campus, they're completely geared up for receiving foreign guests, how they pitch to them. So the real issue is the mindset of Indian entrepreneur. And actually the real problem is the domestic market. And then earlier even government's mindset was also very incremental. Now I see with the, the scheme which they have come out with, production link, PLI. So that shows the government's commitment and mindset. And let's see whether global capacities they come up with, whether the entrepreneurs here say whether it is in chemical, whether in steel. As I said, steel is the simplest possible. It's a global commodity, global price, and global. We have a global competitive edge in terms of lowest cost production, and we get the enough quality also. But why can't we produce 100 million tons of steel for the world? I mean, that is a basic question to ask. So I think the mindset till it changes of the entrepreneur. Government has changed. Entrepreneurs also selectively they'll start looking at the opportunities. And even in China, to get the all the hurdles of domestic markets, what they did was they set up all these SEZs, you know, all the over the coast, they set up the SEZ where the domestic market never come on the way to that it was a parallel foreign market types, you know, so there was no laws of the domestic market were applicable there. They made them absolutely free. And I don't know enough about it, but they said, he was saying that that's how even China took off. So I think government is doing their bit of it, and nothing happens overnight. You have to have patience, and they'll keep correcting as the more suggestions keep coming. But they seem to be committed because this is the youngest country. So many people are coming to the job market, and services cannot absorb all these guys. And particularly low cost, young labor available, you can make all the low cost manufacturing or low value added manufacturing in India. Textile, I mean, we have all the fibers in the world here, and we have all the machine. Why can't, and we have the designing capability. Why can't we be a textile exporter of the world? But we are very small. I mean, Bangladesh has taken the lead because Bangladesh has the mindset, because their own consumption is very small. They are exporting to the whole world. So everything is geared up for, in fact, Indian manufacturers are getting manufactured from all of this. So, so we have to learn from this thing. I mean, I found this to be very, very sensible in what he was saying. So I think the lure of the local markets and incrementalism, these are two different things. So I think government probably has to find their own Indian way. Now we are digital, we are very forward looking. Government is committed. So what will be their way to cut the clutter and create enterprises which will cater broadly first to the global markets and then incrementally to India? You have to just reverse the pie, you know, and when that happens, then you see the resurgence of manufacturing in India. Otherwise, currently, if you are going to the port, again, you have the hassle, you know, you import any other stuff from outside. I mean, clearing Indian customs and getting the stuff into your home is so tough. I mean, the guys, they slog there. So clearly, there are a lot of issues because manufacturing is very low value added, and a lot of physicality is there. So if there is one place where the pain point is there, entrepreneurs' margins are very thin, they will find it very tough to really compete with the likes of China. Because services, what happens is you get Indian cost, American value. You produce for $10, you sell it for $25-$30. Here it is not the case. In Indian, even with the new digital, what you call manufacturing, your Indian cost is $10, but you have to compete with China for the price. So maybe you sell it for $11 or $12. No more game of $25-$30. So you have to be extremely efficient, as efficient as China in every aspect of it, and then you make your space in the global market. So, so my sense is that we need that mindset change, and government has to get into each and every. I'm saying that why can't we do the steel 100 million tons? Let's focus on that. Why can't we produce 100 million tons of wheat and dump in the global markets? So I think we have to go methodically like that. But I think government works in a very different way. We can talk like this, but government has so many people coordinating with each other. It's not that easy to make a plea like this and make it happen. So I think, but best thing is that Babus are now driven. They want to make it happen. And let's see what else. They will find their own way of doing it, but they will do it. So I'm very hopeful on that.
Great, sir. Great. So you think that it is likely to shape up well. Now I'm going to Hiren Ved. So Hiren, you started up your career in 90s and you keep a track on most of the global economies as well. When you were setting up your LME asset management business, you saw particularly in India service industry picking up, whereas manufacturing is going to be at all-time low. On the other hand, you saw China shaping up big time on the manufacturing side. So what's your views on that? Because 25 years down the line, you're coming back to the situation where manufacturing is going to play an important role. So over to you.
Thanks, Vikas. I think when I started, actually manufacturing was doing quite well. You had the big companies in the index, in the Sensex, the cement manufacturers, the textile manufacturers, the chemical manufacturers, right? And to be fair, we had a lost decade of manufacturing post the global financial crisis, you know, from 2010-11, right, in the run-up to COVID. And if you look at whether manufacturing share in GDP, or I was just looking at what is the weight of manufacturing companies in the Nifty, it's just hardly 11%, right? Services, which includes banking, IT services, is now 40-50% of the index. That tells you where the growth has been in the last few years. We really had a lost decade of manufacturing. But I think there is now hope. I don't want to repeat what two of my esteemed colleagues have already mentioned, but and I'm going to take a little bit of a devil's advocate, not because I'm not bullish on manufacturing, but I think that what I see is what has hobbled manufacturing in India is land, labor, and local bureaucracy, right? I think it has been, when I talk to industrialists, you know what happened when Tata Motors wanted to set up a plant in West Bengal, right? I mean, land is very, very important component when you want to start manufacturing. And unfortunately, in India, land is a big political issue. It can become a political issue, right? And I think, therefore, one of the things that India needs to do, and to some extent it has already started doing, what Ramdevji mentioned, what China did, is to have dedicated industrial parks where the government takes the responsibility of acquiring the land, creating a plug-and-play infrastructure, and then leasing it out to large industrial houses or whoever wants to come and manufacture, right? So you have to have the enabling environment for that. Labor. I think we have enough labor in this country, but we need to skill them, right? See, one of the problems of manufacturing in India, if you see, was that nowhere in the world do cement companies also are power companies. Nowhere in the world they had captive power. India is the unique country where every cement company or anybody who was serious in manufacturing, whether aluminium or steel or whatever, had to have captive power plants because the grid could not supply you competitive, uninterrupted 24/7 power. But that's changing now, right? But Indians were very good, right? You know, Indian manufacturers solved that problem by setting up captive power plants and said, "Theek hai, agar sarkar nahi deti, toh main khud lagata hun power plant." And the same happened in services also. When Infosys was set up, they set up almost a large university in Mysore, where they trained their own software engineers because our engineering institutes could not skill them for what was required, right? So I think that when it comes to labor, we need a lot of skilling. Yes, there were ITIs set up in India, and now this government has talked about skilling labor in a big way. But it's very, very important that land, labor, and local bureaucracy. I think the central bureaucracy has become very sensitive, very open, you know, very business friendly. But when I still talk to some of my friends in manufacturing, they complained about local bureaucracy and harassment, right? And again, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be bearish. I'm just saying that these, if we indeed want to be globally competitive, we need to solve the hard problems. It's great to say that, you know, the world is an opportunity for us. We have a great domestic market. But believe you me, all these entrepreneurs who have built, they have had to do much more than pure manufacturing, right? They've had to manage the environment. They've had to manage the local bureaucracy. They have to set up power plants, they have to get permissions. And we are getting there. But I think that's a hard problem that, you know, we need to tackle some of these hard problems, right? Ramdevji made a very good observation on culture. When I look at from an investment perspective and I see, is manufacturing sexy? I mean, there are very few business groups in India which have the passion and the culture for quality and manufacturing, right? For example, the Sundaram or the TVS group in South, the Ranes of the world, the Munjals of the world, the, you know, the Bharat Forge of the world, right? But they are few and far between. Like, how many companies, you know, Sundaram Fasteners is a classic example where all 17 companies are Deming Award winning. Each of their plants have won a Deming Award. But why? Because they have that culture. They have the passion that every product that comes out of my factory has to be of the highest quality. Like how the Japanese and the Koreans, they're completely mad when it comes to quality, right? So I think that culture has to be there. And I think that, you know, what I see is that when I talk to a lot of our industrialist friends and I say the next generation, in many cases, not in all cases, to be fair, but in many cases, they don't want to get into manufacturing. They want to set up a family office. They want to go into finance. They want to do something in technology. They want to do in social media. They don't want the hassle of handling labor. They don't want to handle shop floor problems. They don't want to get on, roll up your sleeves and solve the hard problems, right? So how, for example, in banks, in financial services, in IT services, in technology, you hear that people give ESOPs. How many manufacturing companies are willing to give ESOPs to the factory manager, to the supervisor, right? I mean, Infosys democratized wealth making by giving ESOPs to everybody down the line. But do we hear that in manufacturing? We don't. There are very few examples where, or I see very few resolutions being passed in manufacturing companies where they say, ke nahin, hum ESOP denge. Services, mein, retailing, mein, technology, mein, sabko ESOP dena hai, lekin manufacturing, mein, you have to make manufacturing in enticing enough for the next generation to have that passion and culture to manufacture. I think there are five enablers that required, you know, and I think India has all the five enablers to become a big manufacturer. You need a large domestic market. India has it. You need infrastructure, ports, railway lines, logistics parks. I think we are getting there. This government is very serious about building last mile infrastructure. We are doing the dedicated freight corridor. We are doing all the right things. We need the right policy framework. We have now competitive tax rates. We have PLI schemes. This government is also now one very important reason why many of the Southeast Asian countries became successful is because they had free trade agreements with the big buyers. India is now getting there. We are signing free trade agreements with a lot of the consuming countries. We did it with UAE. We did it with Australia. We are doing it with UK. Fourth, we need manpower. I spoke about that. Fifth, we need resources. And Ramdevji spoke about that. I mean, we have abandoned resources. We have bauxite. We have iron ore. We have cotton. So we can be fully integrated. If you are fully integrated, you can be cost competitive, right? So I think that we need a combination of solving the hard problems that manufacturers still face of infrastructure, local bureaucracy, land, labor, and we need scale. Look at why India, and I think India is in a unique opportunity. Look at the two-wheeler manufacturers in India. Bajaj Auto sells more than 50% of its production it exports to more than 80 countries. Why? Because India was such a large market that they got scale. Because they got scale, they were competitive. Because we were competitive, they could sell to the world. The same thing happened with Maruti and Hyundai, right? Because Indians couldn't afford big cars. We were buying small cars, but we had scale. Because we had scale, India started exporting small cars to the world. And I think Jiten Bhai made a very right point that we lost out on low cost, high volume exports. But I think where India has the edge as manufacturing 4.0 becomes a reality, where you need, beyond manufacturing, you need design skills, you need engineering skills, right? India is very good at that, because we can then use our capabilities in design, software, engineering, where we can then add value and do high value exports, right? Today, our Prime Minister is talking about having indigenous technology for 5G and 6G, right? And we want to export to the world, because now people don't trust buying Chinese telecom equipment. And India has an opportunity to export, Indian made equipment. So I think in a world where software and automation and engineering and design becomes an integral part of manufacturing, I think India has a very, very strong role to play. I don't think China is going away in a hurry. I think the scale that they have built in low cost and large volume manufacturing will remain. So we should not be in some la la land. Yes, a lot of rewiring of global supply chains is happening, and China plus one and Europe plus one is definitely happening. I think, for example, in pharmaceuticals, agrochemicals, specialty chemicals, India has a great advantage. Why? Because I don't think Vietnam can do it. I don't think Bangladesh can compete with us in textiles, but they can't compete with us in pharmaceuticals or specialty chemicals. They don't have the chemistry skills. They don't have the engineering skills to set up a complex 8-process chemistry plant. They don't have the skill sets. India has that skill sets. So we need to identify. Secondly, if you look at every emerging or developing country which has become developed, they have at least had two sectors where that country was globally competitive. Japan did it in electronics and automotive. Korea copied the same model. Taiwan has done it in high-tech semiconductor and, you know, electronic manufacturing. China did it in high-volume, low-value manufacturing. India has done it in pharmaceuticals, in autos, auto components, specialty chemicals, agrochemicals, and pharma. So I think while we have PLI across 14, 15, 16 sectors, but there has to be a strategic mindset. We have to decide these 4 or 5 areas we want to build scale and competitive advantage. You cannot be good at everything. So you decide, and then you incentivize the entrepreneurs and give them everything that they want. And then you will see how Indians are able to really outshine. And I'll give you one example. Ramdevji mentioned about Bangladesh. You know what happened during COVID? The first set of people who were given a vaccine in Bangladesh were the textile workers. That was the level of strategic thinking. They didn't give it to the average guy first. Why? Because they said, this is so critical. We are, you know, we can't let our customers suffer, and we will first vaccinate our textile customers. That is the level of strategic thinking that a Bangladesh did. So I think we need strategic thinking. We need to solve hard problems. We need to improve, incentivize and improve the culture. You need to make manufacturing sexy for the next generation. That's when we will be at the cutting edge of manufacturing. But I have no doubt that we will get there.
Great, great. You rightly said it's all about mindset. If you have the right culture, right mindset, obviously you want to see this shaping up very well. So Jitendra ji, main aapke paas main aata hun. So, you know, my next question is, you talked about India is the fifth largest economy, and now we are moving towards becoming the third largest economy. So what do you think, what can go wrong on our way to become third largest economy, maybe 5, 7, 8 years down the line?
So, you know, Vikas, I believe very firmly that India is going to be a $10 trillion economy. Firstly, the numbers that we are all putting out, which make us the fifth largest, does not capture the unaccounted or the underground economy in India. So if you put those numbers together, I would like to believe that we are already fourth largest, not fifth largest. Very importantly, I think, we have really restructured our economy. We have taken some very hard decisions. The economy has gone through a pain in the first term of Modi ji. There are lots of structural changes like, you know, introduction of GST and RERA, which had actually slowed down the economy, demonetization, etc. And, you know, when we were ready to take off, I think you saw things like, you know, COVID hit us very badly for 2 years. Thereafter, there was the war in Ukraine, etc. Now, if you take a look at the last 9 years, that despite of all these challenges, most of our companies have actually done well, if I look at the background. Now, if you have a cleaner environment, the internal challenges today don't exist, which means that I think, you know, you have everything that's ready for us internally. But what is disrupting us today is probably, you know, the global supply chains have broken down. You have deglobalized, volatility is at its height, and there is a slowdown in the Western world. And I think, you know, geopolitically also, there are huge disturbances. The world was never so divided. You have China and US, the two largest economies in the world, they are at loggerheads. So I think this is all not going to end very soon. And, you know, like my colleagues mentioned, you know, today the tailwinds are in our favor. I believe that Indian entrepreneurs will get their way out, because if you look at the last couple of years, they have achieved all of that despite what the environment was and despite what the government was. So I think in the next couple of years, when you have everything, you know, laid out so well, inflation is lower than the West, interest rates now, I've never seen this in so many years, but probably decades and decades, where our rate of our RBI rate is 6.5 and the Fed is at 5. The differential is only 1.5%. So I don't think that, you know, we have seen such things happening in the past. If you ask me, I think there is no way but for capital to flow into India. And one big thing is you are forgetting that in the last couple of years, large business groups have got deleveraged. Tata's, Reliance, look at the Birlas, each of these business groups, Mahindra's, they were highly leveraged at the start of this decade. And, you know, if you see today, all of them are leveraged, all of them have sort of lightened the balance sheets. And today they're all ready for a large round of capex. Each of these business groups have burnt their fingers. I don't think that, you know, whatever Bharti invested 12, 13 years ago or 15 years ago in Africa, they are able to recover their investments today. I don't think Tata's have recovering their investments in Corus. Bajaj shut down Indonesian unit. Bharat Forge sold so many of them, shut down all the units in the West. Every company has had a disastrous experience by investing globally. So nobody wants to come back and, you know, try their luck by going overseas. So naturally, and they all push to invest in India. The other thing is that, you know, the Indian macros have also improved. You cannot have this sort of growth or manufacturing, etc., at very high rates of interest. The wrong kind of borrowers in the market have been also cleaned out by the government in the cleaning out of the banking system and getting the willful defaulters out, getting the, you know, all the economic offenders out of the system. So you have ensured that structurally interest rates are low. You have structurally looked at inflation to be under control. And while the rest of the world is fighting food inflation, we are not even talking about it because our godowns are overflowing with grains. We must give a lot of credit to the green revolution that took place in the 70s in India. So I think many, many things are structurally falling in place. And I believe that our entrepreneurs are amazing. They will always find a way. I must also say that, you know, we were associated with Infosys at the start, and we have seen their struggle also when it was not even a $100 million company, but they found their way. So I think Indian entrepreneurs are very, very amazing. They will find their way. Money will now come back to India. Reliance has committed at least $150 billion till the end of this decade. Tata's have talked about $90 billion. We are looking at Birla's putting $30 billion. Adani's will put in about, you know, $100 billion. So please understand all this money, what can happen to manufacturing, employment, asset creation in the country. This is all going to be very, very robust. Now, I just rewind and I'm asking you that in 2006, if Tata's had put $15-17 billion in steel making capacity in India, what would the balance sheet look like today? It would have been amazing. They would be far ahead of JSW. They took dollarized loans. They lost out in devaluation. There was no labor productivity. When what they assumed at 14-15 million tons is today barely 9-10 million tons manufacturing. They have not been able to recover their capital. Their money has become half after 15 to 17 years. So, you know, you can imagine what blunders were committed at that time. That sort of money, if it put in manufacturing in India. So I think everybody has learned their lesson. And, you know, geopolitical issues are here to stay. Deglobalization is absolutely here to stay. Breakdown of supply chains is here to stay because there is no, you know, there's no consensus for any of these large economies to sort of, you know, function properly. So in my view, when you have a situation like that where there's no choice, you will have all the big investments coming all into India backed by the Indian entrepreneurs, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's infrastructure. And the last 8-9 years, Modi ji has made that happen. 5 years in a row, your tax rates are 25%. If you have set up a new industrial undertaking, your tax is 17-18%. Now, all of this is, you know, giving great confidence. And you have to also see it's coincided with deleveraging of balance sheets. I think everybody is waiting for 2024. As Modi ji comes back and, you know, he leads our nation, the confidence level will go up dramatically. And in my view, not only will foreigners come in, that's going to be very secondary, but I think every Indian entrepreneur will put huge sums of money to work in India. They will not be looking outside of India for any investment. Last 15 years, they wiped out their entire capital. Whoever has gone overseas, Bajaj has wound up their Indonesian unit, Mahindra has walked out of SsangYong. What have we achieved? We have achieved nothing. And actually, there was nothing that so exciting in terms of technology absorption or whatever we did. So what kind of capital was committed, balance sheets were leveraged, you know, and what sort of return you made? So I think it has set back India by at least 1 to 2 decades. Now, when you see these balance sheets are light, look at what Tata is expanding in India. Now look at what Reliance is looking. They're looking to, you know, build the mega cities all over again. They're looking at green hydrogen. They're looking at all these. I think this is going to be unique. And also India's energy insecurity is completely behind us. I don't see India being so dependent, you know, on global fuel that can, you know, completely derail our economy. So you have to remind yourself that, you know, today software exports have far crossed our oil imports. So, you know, this has not happened earlier. So I think everything is falling in place for us. And like, you know, there is Sundaram as one group, like Hiren said, is believing in excellence. I'm saying India will produce hundreds of Sundarams in this next coming decade, because you will find that the opportunity that exists in India is immense. We ourselves are talking as a government to go from, you know, currently $3 to $4 trillion to $32 trillion. Assume we even achieve half of that. There is a huge, long and strong runway, and we will see each and every person benefiting immensely because the market is captive. And, you know, while rest of those economies like China, etc., they're depending on the overseas markets, where we believe that we are at the start of a cycle of structural decline and recession. And at the same time, you know, also, we are not seeing anything great happening in the Western world. So technology is available. It's there for the asking. Capital is available. I think the kind of money that people have put globally to work, I think the results have been very dismal. And what has happened actually in America also in the last decade has just been the tech sector that created value. Manufacturing has gone down. All the traditional businesses are down. And every nation needs to be rebuilt. And I think India is taking a lead at that. So what Modi ji will do in his third term, and probably we all pray and wish and hope that there's a fourth term, I think is structural reforms. And that is something very difficult to reverse. And we will see huge benefits coming out of it all across. So I think we are in a nation that's in a hurry. We are young. We want to build out. Our entrepreneurs have just woken up. And I agree with Ramdev ji that there are many, many difficulties. But I think, you know, anybody who's doing business in India over the last few decades has only faced difficulties. It's not been a smooth run, even for an Infosys or even for a Wipro or anybody. Some difficulty or the other exists. We have never been a smooth run. So I think, you know, our people have learned to live with the challenges. They have emerged even stronger with these challenges. And the next 5 or 10 years, we'll see rapid investments coming in. And I think there'll be huge partnerships and technology transfers. We are not going to manufacture caps and jeans and toys. We're talking about manufacturing aircrafts, mobile phones, setting up a foundry. So we're looking at big investments coming, which will be game changers for India. We are no more talking about, I would say, trailing some of these developed countries. We're trying to talk and reach at par with what they have achieved. And I think we have the capability. I don't see any reason why that will not happen. In the last 5 years, if anybody would have told me that the tax rates are going to remain stable at 25% for 5 years, I would have not believed that person. But that has happened. And we have laid out a very, very strong red carpet for anybody, welcoming them, saying that India is a land where we have demonstrated over the last one decade social, economic and political stability. That's what foreigners want. You want confidence of the government, confidence from the people that my capital is safe. And I think, you know, we have had incidences in the previous government like the Enrons of the world, etc., which have not gone down well. Foreign capital, at least FDI, comes in very slowly, but that's a sign of great confidence. And I think from 2024 onwards, we will be seeing heightened investments both from overseas and domestic, something that we haven't been able to visualize. You will see creation of 40 more airports. You will see lots and lots of things happening. It's the start of a super cycle. And I think nobody can stop it. And Indian entrepreneurs I've spoken to so many of them. Everybody from a Pidilite who's had a bad experience by putting their money in US, Brazil, etc. All these small companies to the large ones like Tata's and Bharti and all of them, they all burned their fingers heavily. They've actually gone behind by 10, 15 years. You can imagine Bharti, they put $10 billion 15 years back. If that money in 2008 was invested in domestic, what would their companies be today? The entire leverage that is there today in the balance sheets is all because of past mistakes. So not a cent is going outside of India. They have no choice but to invest. Economy is very robust. And the outlook is so favorable that you will see 5 or 10x growth in fixed asset formation by the end of this decade. So I am a firm believer that there is no choice. It's the tailwinds are with you and there is no choice. I don't see any entrepreneur going outside and putting one red cent. Tata's have burned their fingers in the hotel industry globally, hospitality. Everywhere any people have put money, they have never seen one red cent recovery. You show me one global investment that has done well in the last 10 to 15 years. Anything made by any large industrial house. They only burned their fingers. So nobody is in a mood. I've spoken to so many of them. I've spoken at chairman level to that. They said, nothing doing. We're only going to commit our capital to India. So that's a massive sign. I'm saying it's a very bullish sign. And they're all waiting for 24 to happen so that they start, you know, expanding in a very big way. And I see that will be the turning point for India after 24. We wouldn't have, you know, you have just set the base, you have strengthened the foundation, you have put the building blocks in place. But the takeoff for India will be in FY24 and onwards. And believe me, we will see $10 trillion happening faster than we can imagine.
Great, Jiten sir. It's great to learn a lot of things from you, the way you analyze these conglomerates, the way the kind of mistakes they've made, and what if they would have not made the question which is asked by you, where would have been today, you know, and what contribution it would have made to the economy. My last question to Ramdevji, and then I'll come to Hiren after that. Ramdevji, aapse question hai ki pichle dashak mein ya uske pehle mein aap ऐसा कोई मेजर न्यूज आपको सुनने को नहीं मिलता है कैपेक्स लेने के लिए गवर्नमेंट को बोलते हैं तो गवर्नमेंट बोलता है प्राइवेट सेक्टर लेगा प्राइवेट को बोलते हैं तो गवर्नमेंट लेगा और बैंक से बात करें तो कोई बड़ा लोन देने के लिए तैयार नहीं है एंड इसके वजह से मैन्युफैक्चरिंग में कुछ हो नहीं पा रहा है सो व्हाट्स योर टेक ऑन दैट डू यू थिंक दिस ट्रेंड विल चेंज और यू सी दैट देयर विल बी सम मेजर शिफ्ट
द ट्रेंड विल चेंज बट यू नो आई वाज टॉकिंग टू I think it was L&T or something. So they said, you know, the guys who came for large capex on the stories of India doing well, India shining, India's story has always been great for last 50 years. So now it might look even better. India had always been land of promise. So what happened was in 2008-09, a lot of power plants, a lot of steel plants, they all came up. And then what happened? There were 1-2G design and out of turn allotment of collieries, iron ore mines, everything was taken away. And what happened was the loans remained in their books. So all the banks also suffered and all the entrepreneurs, they're all bankrupt or they got decimated in terms of their balance sheet and P&L and all kinds of restructuring and everything happened. So it was a lost decade for them. And now some of them are completely out of business. So now Indian corporate, they are deleveraged. They are not going outside India, but they are very cautious in putting up new capacities. They are saying, show me the demand, then I'll put it up. Earlier, there was a promise of demand and they'll put it up the huge capacity. So that is not going to happen now. Earlier, capacity building happened front-ended. Now, capacity building will happen back-ended. So let the demand come up. I think Indian entrepreneurs, given opportunity, they will, like, if you want, instead of 3 million cars, you want 5 million cars, wo ghuma phira ke aapko bana ke de denge. You know, like, they will deliver, I'm telling you. The issue is that, is there a demand? And now, because of they have burned their hands once, they're not willing to, they're not coming up now. And that's where the government should not lose patience. They must keep it on, keep the pedal on, maybe 6 months, maybe 1 year, as the markets starts building up. And the profitability of the existing capacity goes up, clearly there will be new capacities coming in. So that I don't have any doubts that now the banks and all, they have also burned their hands. See, all the PSU banks, they really lent a lot of money. And we can keep finding a flaw with them that they've given disproportionate amount of money, but they backed the India story. And then what happened was, you know, what really happened. And even PSU banks had a loss ticket because of all those bulk loans. So now everybody wants to build a consumer bank. The banks which were industrial loan banks, they have become a consumer loan bank. So there is nobody who is willing to look at 5,000, 20,000, 40,000 crore. You want to put up a steel plant of 25 million tons, you need almost a lakh crore. And even if you have, say, 50-50 or 67, you need 60-70,000 crores of underwriting of loans. So from where it is going to come? I mean, no bank is willing to look at this kind of sizes. Though balance sheet of the banks are largest right now. They are very large, seriously large. With the consolidation, they become even larger. But the appetite to underwrite industrial loans is very low. So I think that part also has to be seen by the government, how exactly they make it happen. But that's what I see, that government is determined to make it happen. So these obstacles which will come on the way, but government can do nothing about the demand. If the demand is not there for steel, you cannot expect them to put up more capacity, you know, because then they'll be stuck with that. Second, what happens is, you as an entrepreneur, when you are an entrepreneur, Indian entrepreneurs, when in China, when they are in trouble, government is fully there, because that's a part of the China Inc. kind of policy. In India, you have to fend for yourself. When there is success, everybody will come, stock market will take you to the sky high. When there is a failure, the failure in the business is taken as an integrity issue. Ki chor hai. You know, wo fail hua hai, lekin usko bolte chor hai. Failing in business is done. But you can't call the failing as a chore, you know. And even the regulators treat it like that. If the guy has failed to, what you call, repay his loans, he's, what is that? It is non-bankable entity and willful defaulter and whole lot of things. You know, with that, he's completely chopped off. So what happens is, the guy who is not, like people like us who are solvent, we don't want to get into that category. So who the hell is going to take the risk? You know, and what happens is, another thing what I observe is that I went to US and I was visiting a company, Indian company in US. So I said, I mean, do you have any, I mean, he has a unit in India and he has a unit in US. So he said, what is your experience? So he says, in US, you need to bring your capital and entrepreneurship. Rest all will be taken care of by system. There is no obstacle at all. You do manufacturing, you do logistics, whatever. There is no, I mean, no hazard at all. Everybody comes to help you. In India, the moment you are in manufacturing, you have to take care of the local bosses. They will just visit. It's not that they're asking for blackmailing or anything like that, but you have to take care of them. You have to have a cup of tea. You have to generally massage their egos or whatever. But that is very difficult. It is not a skill, it's a level skill. A lot of people don't have that skill. Like, I may not be very good at it. How do I do it? So, you know, entrepreneurship is one thing, but managing people is yet another. And they are the powerful guys. They can just stop. They'll say that, okay, I'll not give you a permit. Go whatever you want. So, I think, but then the small things, they have their own obstacles. And the scalability, freewheeling, expansion of the capacities, manufacturing for domestic market as well as for, it's not only about, see, we are talking about manufacturing. It can be for domestic market as well as for global markets. You know, but the leverage today to cater to the market is a lot more than only for domestic market incrementally. So my sense is that I think today morning the news came that iPhone export has grown by 440%. Last year they did 1.1 billion. This year they have done 5 billion. And of the 5 billion, I remember bulk of it has happened in last four months. I think in March alone, their run rate would be more like a 1.3, 1.4 billion. So the next year, the same number, if the run rate is maintained, my sense it could be $10 or $15 billion. One single entity, you know, in just 2 years' time. So that's the power of when the government comes with PIL, they give the land, they make all the amendments to the labor laws, state, I think center-state relationship. When the center wants something, Modi ji can work only at the center. But beyond that, when the center-state relationship comes, in Karnataka, he buys a opposition government. I mean, the economics should be way above the politics. When you come together, the forces that this double engine concept is massive, you know. So I think it is important that these are national objectives and the center-state political relationship should not come on the way of scaling up, because in any case, it's a physical stuff. Manufacturing is physical. Services are digital or invisible kind of thing. So there you have to only handle people. Here you have to handle all sorts of logistics. And that requires at least there should not be political obstacle. The objective of the state government, objective of the central government, that should all come together. And that is where also we suffer. You know, those are things which have this thing. So I don't have any doubts it is going to happen. And, you know, we have to have patience. And as Jitu said, that after 24, there will be further commitment of another 5 years of continuation of the policy. This is another thing. When you have the majority government and policies continue, because ultimately the rules of the game. If the rules of the game is changing every 2-3 years or at the whims and fancy of the coalition government, it is very tough. Somebody says that, okay, boss, I'll shut my manufacturing and let me import from China. That is much better. And he gets a policy change in favor of imports. Aapko khatam ho gaya pura pura industry. Uska fayda ho gaya, lekin baaki pura industry chopat ho gaya. You know? So I think there are a lot of these issues which has, but the opportunity is large. And some of the industries we have, even on low cost and mass manufacturing, we have potential. Entrepreneurs, I'm telling you, entrepreneurs are greedy for the not only profit, but for the market cap now. New thing is the market cap. You make a success, demonstrate of 1 lakh, 2 lakh crore market cap, the guys who are sleeping, they will also come and do it, I'm telling you. I know Reliance Power ka market, 1400 rupees ka listing hua, kitna listing hua, usko dekhe kitne sare power company ban gaye, that all of us know. The guys, they never knew what is a power company. They started the power company by listing their Capri Power. They thought that it is the same valuation what Reliance Power got. So I think we have wonderful capital markets, you know. And aap manufacturing ka market kya badhao, matlab aisa karo ki people love it. And then you see the fun. You know, and why the Bharti Telecom happened? Because Bharti Telecom became the top 2-3 market cap company. I mean, the market cap was 2.5 lakh crores in 2005-06. I was one of the investors. So because of that, the 2Gs came up. Because of success of Bharti market cap, not the company. It is market cap, greed of market cap of the, you know, in the system. Everybody wants to be number one, number two, number three. I mean, that is the biggest magnet, I'm telling you. Government should see to it.
That's right.
They should grant the profit, create the damn P&L, and make the, like, PLI is nothing but building a P&L only. So that's the right style. Once they get the P&L, once they get the multiple, once they get the growth, I think market cap will happen, and two or three companies more than a lakh crore market cap, and then government has to do nothing. They have to just watch the game.
Great, sir. Great insights. I know Ramdev, you will have to leave now in 10 minutes. So my last question, because he has some other commitments. So my last question to Hirenji, I'm coming to you. So, you know, this Indian story is well known to most of the FIIs in India, and they had more than 25% holdings exposure. I'm talking about it, particularly going down. Not that they are not aware of this development, number one. And number two, we see while FIIs monies are going out, FPIs, but then FDIs, direct investments are coming in. So how do you see these two things are going ahead? That's the last question, and we'll conclude the session post that. Over to you.
You know, I think we should not stress too much about FII buying or selling. Yes, we require, I mean, you know, they are all welcome. All capital is welcome in this country. And, but I think what is, what you said was most important. FDI coming in is a much better indicator of confidence in India than FII. See, FII money has many other considerations, right? They have many other options to invest in. India is not the only country that they want to invest in, right? It also depends on global macro, and there is no one kind of FII. There are, you know, we think of FII as one monolithic person sitting somewhere outside deciding whether to invest in India or not. I mean, today there are macro funds, there is ETF money. Now, when interest rates go up, people want to, get out of emerging markets and put money in. So there are many considerations when it comes to FII. I think what is more important is FDI, and there the direction is very clear that every single year we've been getting higher and higher FDI. And as Rakesh ji, my erstwhile partner, used to say, ki ladki sundar hai to sab aayenge, to FII bhi aayega jo 18% ho gaya hai wo wapis 24% bhi ho sakta hai, aisa kuch likha nahi hai ki they will not come back, right? I think what happened last year, and you know, is that India outperformed. And China is a very large emerging market, and China massively underperformed. And, you know, a lot of the global money is benchmarked, right? So to MSCI and stuff like that, right? So automatically India's weight went up and China's weight went down dramatically. And many of these large institutions can't run, can't be away from the benchmarks very significantly. And hence, they had to sell in India just to bring down their weight. And that was one of the technical reasons. I'm not saying that's the only reason, but that was one of the important technical reasons why FIs have been selling, right? But my sense is that, there is this feeling that people always have that India is an expensive market, but it's like comparing apples and oranges. The amount of high cash flow, high ROCE, high ROE businesses that we have in our index makes our, and the index itself has a survivor bias, right? So it throws out companies that are not efficient and takes in companies that are creating value. And therefore, that should not be taken as in its absolute sense that India is expensive. Yes. Markets do go through valuation swings, but I would not stress too much about FIs coming or not coming. I think we have to be very grateful to the mutual fund industry in India in the way they've marketed themselves, where today, in a very systematically, there is constant flow of money that is coming into the equity markets. And that is a bigger source of risk capital than just foreign capital. That is a more stable source of capital. And this has been possible because inflation in India has now come down structurally, which means that people's wanting to put money in hard assets to hedge themselves against inflation, that need has come down dramatically. And people have realized that you can actually build wealth by investing in the equity market. So I think while FII money is important, and I also believe that it will come back, I wouldn't stress too much about their weights going down from 24 to 18%. The India story is strong and it will come back. I think what the government needs to work on is to keep attracting FDI, and FDI will come, because a few years ago, when you asked CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies, they were asked, what's your China strategy? Today, they've been asked, what is your India strategy? Right? And that will mean that more and more FDI will come in this country. And that is a far more important source of capital than FII. Though FII is also important, it will also come.
Sure. Great, sir. So with that, we'd like to conclude the session here. And I take this opportunity to thank all of you for taking the time out from your busy schedule, joining the session and educating our investor community. So thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks, Vikas.
Thank you, Vikas.